Bianco, registration number 37930, and I'm here today representing Mr. Mullins. Although there are three issues on appeal, I intend to focus my argument today on the second issue regarding the expert testimony offered by Ms. Woods regarding the various physical locations of the passengers within this car. So what's really at issue in this case is that Mr. Mullins was denied a fair trial when the trial court permitted Ms. Woods to testify to something outside of her area of expertise, which is to say who was in what spot in the car during what was an incredibly horrific car crash. And it was an opinion she was wholly unqualified to give. To really fully understand that issue, I think it's important to understand exactly how violent this crash was. Mr. Mullins and Mr. Hodel were riding in a car that struck head-on to a guardrail that crossed a bridge, causing it to spin out. It spun out over the bridge, circling in the air, repeatedly striking the bridge on its way down, and ultimately it hooked on a cable, which snapped it to a stop, first rotating it again. The engine, it ended up on the far side of the creek. The engine ended up even farther down the road. So in this case, what Ms. Woods said is essentially you could tell based on the airbags and based on the DNA on the airbags where each person was at the time that the crash commenced.
Ms. Bianco, in looking at this testimony and looking at the curriculum vitae of the expert, as I understand it, she's a splatter expert.
She has.
And her testimony was that the two individuals were potentially placed at locations. I don't think she gave testimony within a high degree of probability, scientific probability, that the parties were placed any place in the car. Instead, her testimony was that the splatter indicated that there was no DNA from the passenger on the driver's airbag, and that there was in fact expurgation, vomit on the driver's side airbag that was tied to the defendant, and that the defendant's blood splatter was a little bit of everywhere.
Well, I guess that's sort of a multi-part question. So I'll start with the fact that she did have courses listed on her CV that she had taken blood splatter analysis classes. However, that's again why I bring your attention back to what this crash was like. I mean, this was a situation where bodies were spinning around in a washing machine as it went over a bridge, and it was extremely violent. So whether or not someone can tell what where blood came from in a situation where somebody is stabbed and two people are stationary is very different than this situation, which requires an understanding of physics, of biomechanics, of auto mechanical engineering, in order to be able to say, as this car moves through the air, what was happening. In terms of her qualification of her testimony as potentially they were there, I would note that as an initial matter, that in context, the district attorney asked her, based on your experience and your examination of the evidence in this case, what conclusions did you draw? And she responded, quote, my results indicate that potentially Mr. Mullins was in the driver's seat and potentially Mr. Hodel was in the passenger seat. She then went on again and again to tell the jury that this was the single best piece of evidence that one could obtain in a situation like this where the question is who was driving. So although her initial statement was qualified with the phrase potentially, between the way she used her testimony throughout the remainder of her testimony and the way it was used by the district attorney in closing, told the jury over and over again, this is good evidence. You can rely on this evidence to determine who was driving the car.
Pardon me for interrupting, Ms. Bianco, but isn't this just simply a statement that it is consistent with the placement that you have described? And if so, that consistency can be attacked by the defense, can be argued against. And as Judge Graham pointed out, this is not a statement that there is scientific certainty of the placement. It is simply, this is consistent with such a placement. Am I wrong about that?
No, I agree that her first statement is that this was potentially where they were located, and that is a statement that includes some qualification. But for the reasons that I was just explaining to Judge Graham, she went back to this over and over again and told the jury, I took these tests from where I did in order to determine who was driving this car.
Ms. Bianco, wasn't there other evidence, circumstantial evidence, that would indicate that the placement of the individuals in the car was that the defendant was driving?
There was some other circumstantial evidence, Your Honor, but as I argued in the first issue in my brief, I would contend even with this evidence, which I think was extremely damaging and improper, the evidence was extremely thin in this case.
Well, I'm in particular focused in the record on the pictures that show that there is a cable that keeps the driver's door from being opened, and it shows the passenger door being operable. Yet the defendant here crawled out through the back window.
Well, I mean, I guess there are two answers I have to that. First of all, nobody testified that the driver's door was inoperable.
No, I understand that, but the jury did see the photographs,
right?
Did it not?
Yes, it did.
And that's certainly an inference that a jury could draw from the evidence.
Well, so that brings me to my second point. I guess I disagree with you that that's what the picture showed. That wasn't how I saw the pictures. It looked to me like what the cable was doing was it basically peeled the hood of the car back almost like a can. And both doors, I mean, were damaged. Both doors looked to me to be unobstructed. And it was, I believe, there was testimony that Mr. Mullins climbed out the back of the car. So if he could have climbed out the passenger door of the car, or the driver's door of the car, presumably he would have done so. Although, again, I would say, given the nature of this crash, it's very difficult for anybody to know where he was at the time the car came to rest, because this was a car that was spinning in the air, and the forces involved in that are extreme. I think that if the district attorney could have found somebody who would come in and say, you know, this is how the forces would have acted on these different bodies, he would have done so. So I guess I don't, personally, that's not how I saw the pictures, but, you know, yes, the jury could draw that conclusion. Nonetheless, what they heard in this case was the testimony of someone who had been qualified as an expert in DNA, and they were then told by the DA, sort of couched her testimony as expert testimony about DNA, saying the DNA provides a snapshot in time. The DNA is that good. And the jury would likely give a lot of credence to that, but again, when you go back and look at what she's qualified to do, there's no way she could have given this opinion properly as an expert. I mean, she couldn't know when during the crash the airbags deployed. She couldn't have known how the bodies were thrown around during the course of the crash. She couldn't know if the other contents of the car were thrown around during the crash. Again, this was Mr. Hodel's girlfriend's car, and there were a lot of other, you can see in the pictures, a lot of other belongings were in the car. So we don't know if some of this DNA could have been transferred DNA, and she wouldn't know that based on her expertise. She could identify that that was his DNA, and that was perfectly proper, and the jury could have drawn that conclusion. But in this case, the jury was given expert testimony, and as the case law tells us, juries place a lot of weight on the testimony that experts give.
Well, don't we have the situation that she clearly can say, I found defendant's DNA on driver's bag. I found it in both blood and vomit. Mm-hmm. I did not find victim's DNA on driver's bag. I did also find a little bit of defendant's DNA on driver's bag. On
passenger's
bag. Mm-hmm. So don't those things lead to inferences that the jury could draw, that defendant is behind the wheel and victim is in the passenger seat?
I mean, absolutely, Your Honor. Those are inferences that a jury could draw. But in this case, the jury was given this extra, I would argue, if you really look at her testimony, that it actually, much of it runs counter to common sense. But the jury was told, basically, put aside what you may think is common sense, which is that people bounce around in a car, people are climbing over airbags. The airbags were still deployed at the end of the car crash, so who knows when he came into contact with them. Put aside all of that. This expert is telling you that based on her knowledge of DNA and her knowledge of this subject matter, you can tell who was in those seats at the beginning of the crash, not did they come into contact with those bags at some point in the crash. And again, the weight that experts are given by juries make it very problematic in a case like this where the district attorney really relied on this evidence in closing and the evidence was very thin. So if you all have any other questions, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
All right, Ms. Bianco.
May it please the court, my name is Jay Fisher, registration number 44350, and I represent the people in this matter. As Judge Bernard just indicated, the expert's testimony in this particular matter was nothing but a series of common sense inferences that were drawn by the evidence that she accumulated in this particular matter. Her testimony boiled down to essentially that airbags deploy quickly, they deploy forcefully, and they deploy at the point of impact. And that's, again, just a common sense piece of knowledge that's known to the public generally and certainly would have been known to a reasonable juror in this particular matter.
Counselor, excuse me for interrupting you, but she offered the testimony as an expert. That was the question she was asked, wasn't it? In your expertise, can you give us this answer? And isn't that a little different than saying that you could draw those common sense conclusions?
Well, her overall testimony was as an expert in this particular matter, but there's nothing in Colorado law that bars an expert from making common sense conclusions when providing testimony to the court. The question in particular here wasn't necessarily phrased as, in your expert opinion, where do these people see it? It's just what conclusions can you draw based upon the evidence that you examine this particular matter? And again, as has already been mentioned by the bench in this particular case, she didn't state conclusively that people were seated in any particular position during this particular crash. She stated that they were potentially in these particular positions. The defendant was in the driver's seat and the victim in this matter was in the passenger seat. She even hedged her bets further by later on saying that I'm not an airbag expert. So in some way, she was discounting her own testimony in this particular matter, at least on that particular issue. But that her testimony as to whose DNA was where in terms of on the airbags, she stated with a great degree of certainty that, in fact, the defendant was on the driver's side airbag in this particular matter. So based upon that, the jury concluded that, in fact, it was the defendant that was driving the vehicle in this particular case. The defendant just made an argument that the jury, in this particular matter, would have given significant weight to the expert testimony in this matter. However, that runs contrary to what the jury charges were in this particular case. The jury was specifically charged that they were not to give added weight to expert testimony versus that of a layperson. And there's a long line of Colorado cases in this particular, there's a long line of Colorado cases that say that juries are presumed to follow the instructions that they're given. So the presumption must be that in this particular matter, the jury in fact didn't give Ms. Wood's testimony any more weight than it would that of a layperson. And as already mentioned, there was also additional circumstantial evidence to indicate that in fact the defendant was driving this vehicle. So when you combine the expert testimony with that circumstantial evidence, the conclusion was that he was the driver. And really, I mean, based upon that, if the court doesn't have any further questions on this particular subject, the people would ask that you affirm the convictions.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher.
Thank you.
Ms. Bianco, you have 4 minutes and 51 seconds.
Well, that should be more than enough, hopefully. So I just responding quickly to what the Attorney General has said. First of all, his comment that these were common sense inferences. Again, I would just draw the court's attention to the fact that these inferences run counter to common sense. And furthermore, her argument that airbags deploy quickly, they deploy forcefully, and they deploy at the point of impact are not automatically common sense inferences. As the cases cited by the Attorney General show, airbags frequently don't act as they are supposed to, and there was no evidence that they acted as they were supposed to in this case. Furthermore, I guess, to the point that she disclaimed her expertise on airbags. There are a couple of points I have on that. First of all, the question that she was asked immediately prior to saying that they were potentially in these locations was, the district attorney said to her, as an expert in this field of DNA and serology, what conclusions can you make about the comparisons you conducted? And immediately thereafter, she said, based on her work, her results indicated that these people were in these locations. And the fact that she said she wasn't an airbag expert does not, as I was mentioning earlier, undermine the fact that her testimony was treated by the district attorney and by herself as DNA testimony. She was saying, based on where the DNA is, you can draw conclusions about who was sitting where. So it wasn't reliant on airbags. It was reliant on a whole number of subjects that she was not qualified to testify in. Finally, regarding the jury's presumption to follow instructions, I agree that is a presumption in the law, but the case law also tells us, and that it's in place for a reason, juries do, in fact, give extra weight to the testimony of experts. And that's why we have case law like Schreck that put the responsibility with the trial court to, before it allows the testimony to be brought into trial, to determine, is it reliable, and is the person who's offering the testimony qualified to give the testimony? And in this case, the trial court failed to perform that function. And in fact, when the objection was made to the trial court in front of the jury, the court overruled the objection and allowed her to continue, telling the jury that she did, in fact, have the knowledge necessary to give this testimony. So given all of that and the fact that the evidence in this case really was thin, and this was a very strong piece of evidence, very important in the district attorney's case, as shown, demonstrated through the closing argument where he relied almost exclusively on it. This was extremely damaging to Mr. Mullins, and we would ask that this court vacate his conviction, or in the alternative, that you reverse and remand it for a new trial. I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Thank you, Ms. Bianco. Thank you again, Mr. Fisher. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.